T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Henley, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's sports station. Mully and Henley, up early to start your day with Chicago sports talk.
I want to talk about these Cubs and what they're doing.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
One thing I really expected from them is the good pitching staff, and I thought that they would just kind of hand the baton, and they've been doing that now. So I'm not going to sit here and sweat the small stuff. I think as long as the pitching is good, they're going to be in great shape, and I do think the bats will come around.
If you told me Wilson Contreras only had one home run to this point, I'd be like, Cubs are in trouble here. The fact that Baez and Elmora have sparked the offense such as it is, Schwarber has found his stroke. It'll be worrisome if 3 weeks from now we're still waiting on Anthony Rizzo and still expecting some part-time players and or role players to be carrying the bulk of the offense.
Mully and Henley.
What the hell's going on in this show?
I said the other day, what the hell is going on?
Taking you to work every morning from 5 to 9.
Cubs just keep winning, and now coupled with the Pirates' loss, they are in first place.
Never to relinquish the top spot in the Central again this season. And the White Sox are going to help out too. Quick two-game set against the Cardinals, so
well, let's
feel
not
free.
Get carried away.
Come on, I get carried away. It's Mayday.
Mayday. Mayday. White Sox play. This ship is sinking.
No.
That was my Celine Dion.
No.
What's up, Chicago?
Mully and Henley, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Oh, it's so much fun. You know, let me ask something.
I just envision Coop at a Celine Dion concert. No, you know.
No. Hey, Coop, I got great tickets. No. But don't you want to? No.
Are you not listening?
Yeah, I don't think I could see myself going to a Celine Dion.
Whoa.
I'm sorry. I'll back
if
up.
She was singing,
if you wanted to go,
if she was playing in my basement, I'd go upstairs and shut the door.
I don't think it's that bad. I think she does have some pipes.
A lot of disrespect for...
Yeah. That's ridiculous.
The legend of Quebec.
Yeah, blame Canada.
What? You know, we heard Tom Brady there complaining during the update that Joe gave us that he doesn't get the respect, or he pleads the fifth when asked if he gets the respect that he deserves. Do you buy that? I mean, I'm just curious. Tom's had an unbelievable career, but do you think that there's somehow they've dissed him?
Well, he got right after that the little statement. He got on the couch a little bit and started talking about at his age. Well, everyone needs reinforcement and wants to get be appreciated that much more and told all the time. That's just life. But then he got on the couch and talked about as you get older, it has to come from within, and that the old things that used to give you, you know, pleasure or you at least it made you feel appreciated, now it has to be, you know, self-generated. And yeah, he said, I don't know if this is like midlife quarterback crisis or what's going on there, but he really went off on this whole tangent about it's up to the individual to give himself happiness and to give himself validation. I mean, how much more validation does a guy that's had his success need?
Do you feel appreciated by them, and do they have the appropriate gratitude for what you have achieved?
I plead the fifth. I think everybody in general wants to be appreciated more at work, you know, in their professional life. But there's a lot of people that are appreciate me more than, you know, way more than I ever thought, you know, was possible as part of my life. So,
so you know, take it from them?
Well, I think it's, you know, I think it's, you have different influences in your life. And I think the people that I work with, they're trying to get the best out of me. So they're trying to treat me in a way that they feel is going to get the best out of me. And, you know, I've got to get the best out of myself.
And then he went just off on this whole, it's
Tommy!
No, he didn't.
Tommy!
There was none of that.
Tommy!
But then he started talking about how it has to come from within. And he said, as you get older, you realize that.
It's, what I'm learning as you get older is it comes from within. The joy, the happiness, those things come from inside. And, you know, to seek that from others, to seek that from outside influences, people you work with, people that cheer against you or cheer with you, or, you know, I feel like it comes from within for me. So I'm trying to build up what's within me so that I can be the best for me, so that I can be the best for other people.
I didn't like it. I didn't like Tom pleading the fifth. I don't like him kind of whining that he's not celebrated enough. Who could be more celebrated than Tom Brady?
Yeah.
I mean, my God. Okay, it's at work. It's not the outside. It's great to have the adulation of the public. It's great to be married to the supermodel and to be, you know.
Coach Hoodie looked at me wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's just not only that, like what did the Patriots do in the draft, right? They went out and they, with their first pick, they got him an offensive tackle, right? Isaiah Wynn from Georgia. And then they turned around and got Sony Michel. So they got him another weapon in the backfield, a guy who can catch the ball and a guy that can run the ball and can open things up for him. They didn't draft a quarterback. For all the talk of Lamar Jackson and the kid from, you know, whatever, Washington State, all the teams that – all the players they brought in and talked to, they didn't go do that. They didn't bring in a quarterback. They went out. They traded their third-round pick for another tackle. They got him a new offensive line.
Does appreciation equal money? Isn't he
– I don't know. Is that what he means?
Well,
when someone says not at work, does that mean I'm not paid enough?
Well, he's going to average, what, $12 million each of these next couple of years? And obviously, you know, Kirk Cousins says, well, good luck to you on that. That's lunch money to me.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Rodgers wants to be appreciated in Green Bay. But, I mean –
So that's all about money.
Well, I mean, he signed the contract.
Are you appreciated at work? I don't know. What are they going to pay me?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what. Okay. No matter how much money you have, and you have the house with
more.
You have the house with the moat around it, and the drawbridge and everything else.
I should get the most of anyone.
Right.
So that's all that is.
Tommy.
Hey, Tommy.
Is that what he's talking about? The owner doesn't show me enough appreciation.
I think what he's talking about is that his trainer got kicked off the team plane.
Well, that's part of it.
And this is the guy that stretches me out. This is the guy that, oh, he's, you know, my lifestyle. The whole team should follow what I do. And I've got all the players coming over to my guys, whatever it is, the TB41 solution, whatever it is.
Maybe you could get that stuff on the shelves quicker if you're making $28 million a year, not $12 million a year.
All right.
Maybe your trainer, you know.
So that's just a guy.
I'm wondering. I was
complaining
just
about money.
Without being crass enough to say, you know what, I'm underpaid. That, by the way, you know, it's like everyone else around here is getting paid, and everyone's worried about this, that, and everything else. But what about me? Mike Glennon made $6 million more than I did last year. You know, anyone see any problem with this? Anyone got a problem with that picture?
I think what's interesting about what happened in the draft isn't necessarily what the Patriots did. I think it's the Jets and the Bills going and getting themselves quarterbacks, right? So you got Sam Darnold in New York at number 3, and then you got the Jets moving up to seven, to Tampa's spot in order to take where did the Bills move? Josh Allen. I'm sorry. Yeah, they got Josh Allen, and that's what's interesting is Tom's 41, and now you got two young quarterbacks coming into that division. I mean, how long can Tom? Well, Tom will go forever. Oh, Tom feels like a million. Tom's turning 41.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just saying, they don't have a guy sitting behind him waiting.
Nope.
What are they going to do? They let the Garoppolo go. Insane. What are they going to do? They don't have, and I get it. Garoppolo's contract was up, and it's hard to franchise a quarterback
when a
41-year-old guy is standing there, you know, moaning that he doesn't make enough money. If that's what, if your read on it is correct, so
if the backup was making more than Tom Brady standing there on the sideline, and now it's
Tom better be able to play a couple more years because they don't have his replacement in house.
They sure don't.
Interesting. It's very interesting. Should they appreciate Tom more? Do you pour more money into that position? You know,
we're going to talk to Mike Florio, and he was not sure. He wasn't convinced that 2 weeks from now he said he's coming back. But until he actually said that, beyond the appreciation stuff, Mike said it wouldn't have shocked him that come June or whatever, he just said, you know, I'm done. Gave it a lot of thought. See you later. Good luck. Go find yourself a quarterback.
Is he unhappy? Dustin, are you suggesting this? He's unhappy about the Malcolm Butler situation?
No, no. He also, as part of a transcription from that event, he was also asked about that. And he said most of the time, you know, he's on the offensive side, that's the defensive
yes.
side. But he said, like, Malcolm, like, almost was kept coming up to Tom during the game. Not like, hey, go put in a word with coach, but like, served like as a cheerleader, like a motivator. Like, come on, Tom, we got this. Help us win this thing. Come on.
Yeah.
And he just thinks, like, if he had been,
if he
again,
wasn't
remember,
there cheerleading and
in the game,
on the field, they would have won the game.
And
there's a lot of people that feel
Super Bowl,
that way.
That's a yep. Super Bowl that Tom Brady, what, did not
yep.
win. Got two,
right.
but did not win.
And
Mike,
played
how many
unbelievable.
More does he have?
And played Mike, unbelievable.
And
in
Tom
game.
Might somewhere in the recesses of mind think last Super Bowl that he was going to have an opportunity to win.
Right. And so, again, that's also part of the disrespect factor.
You're dissing Tom by
you're dissing
by not
Tom. He's in
Malcolm
the Super Bowl.
By not putting your best
point,
players
right?
out there. Yeah,
right. You're making a bad decision for some
future.
Yeah.
Yes. A statement for the organization
and
as opposed to
not
today.
For Tom
today
and his
is the
win
Super
record,
Bowl, right?
And,
I mean,
right.
wow.
Yeah.
But when you're the Patriots, you can do that kind of stuff because you have so many of those banners and have to reconfigure
yes.
the stadium.
You can do anything you want because
yeah.
you're Bill Belichick.
Yep.
Right. But are you still Bill Belichick without Tom Brady?
Great See, here question. We go. Chicken and the egg again, right?
And vice versa.
Always.
I think it plays vice versa as well.
312-644-6767 is the telephone number. We're going to talk a little baseball next. We'll talk some Cubs. We'll bring in Len Casper for our weekly visit, and we'll ask him about the how quickly the fortunes have turned, and will it remain that way? And are the bats going to get all hotted up, as the English would say, to go along with the pitching staff? Mully and Hanley on the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Here it comes.
Len Casper. TV play-by-play man.
That ball is crushed.
Can you bunt the ball onto Waveland? That's my question.
Way out of here. Hello, Sheffield.
Twitter.com/LenCasper.
Oh, baby, Chris Bryant. Deep drive. Way back. Ball game over. Cubs win.
Len Casper, talking Cubs with Mully and Hanley.
Oh, yeah, it's Mully and Hanley, and we do indeed have Len Casper on 670 The Score. Good morning, Len. How are you?
Doing great, guys. Been a real fun homestand, and now all of a sudden the weather cooperating as well, so life is good in Cubs land.
Well, I got to tell you, the pitching is awful good, and I think we expected this, and now that it's coming to fruition, you get that feeling that guys are almost kind of it comes to that kind of, oh, if you can do it, I can do it. There's almost like the competition to continue things. And, man, the bullpen has been great, and the starting rotation is up and running, and you feel good about all of it.
Yeah, you're right, Mike. I mean, the pitching matters a lot. And when you get great starts like the Cubs have gotten, they haven't allowed an earned run on this homestand. A couple of unearned runs last night charged to John Lester. But that's how you have winning streaks. Typically when you're not getting deep starts, it's really hard to sustain a stretch like this. And then you're right about the bullpen. I think the neatest thing about it is that they haven't had to use Edwards and Morrow every night. They don't want to overuse those guys, especially early in the season. But, you know, a couple of times it's been the combination of Strope and Dunsing and Cishek at the end of the game. And I think that speaks to the depth of this bullpen. We talk about a phrase called the trust factor, and I think that most guys in that pen, with just a couple of exceptions right now, I think Joe would be very comfortable using any of those guys to save a game, and actually maybe all of them. Justin Wilson was up in the ninth inning, a guy who has had some struggles. Mike Montgomery recently finished a ball game. So, yeah, I would say actually probably just about every guy in that bullpen is someone Joe would feel comfortable using in a big spot.
So the streak of 33 2/3 innings without that earned run allowed goes back to 1974, since the Cubs starters did that, and Kevin Zipak was generous enough to look that up and give you a Rick Rushel and a Hey, Bert Hooten and Bill Bonham. I'm less left to build the building, so I don't have total recall like that. But but I'll ask you a question that goes kind of hand in hand with that, Len. Is the current win streak of 5 wins with 3 or fewer runs scored impressive or worrisome as you move on?
Well, yeah, that's the other side of it, Ryan. And we mentioned it when the game all of a sudden took a turn last night and the Rockies scored 2 and you're trailing 2-1, is that the pitching has kind of, you know, covered up the fact that the offense hasn't scored a ton. I think weather-wise, earlier in the homestand, that was a big factor with the wind blowing in. But, you know, I think if you ask most fans, let's forget about the, you know, asking Joe, but if you ask most fans about winning games like this, it feels better, I think, winning 3-2 than it does 10-9, right? It just feels like you have a little more control over the game. And then I think if you ask Joe Maddon, he probably would say the same thing. I think it's a lot tougher to manage a game when it's just you can't figure out who's going to get people out and you just hope to get a 3-run homer at the end of the game. So I like the fact that, you know, early in the year, the Cubs were not winning these games, and that was kind of the one question. I like that this winning streak is kind of the 2-0, 3-2, 2-1, 1-0 type of win, because down the road, you're going to have a bunch of those to get where you need to be.
Len, when you look at a guy like Javi Baez, he had a couple of issues. He's been fantastic, and then he cools off a little bit, and immediately we got, you know, people saying, well, you know, Joe's got to move him down, and they got to give him a day off and all this stuff. What do you make of how Javi has played and where he's at?
Well, it was a rare off game for him defensively last night, and I loved how everyone kind of came up to him right when the game ended, and your teammates picking you up is a big part of this too. And you know, I think Anthony Rizzo's been in that spot on a couple of occasions where he's had a tough offensive night, but you find a way to win, and you know, you just have other guys kind of step up. You know, Almora and Baez have been the 1-2 combination at the top of the order, but inevitably in this game, as you guys well know, the cycles say that they're going to have stretches where they're not getting on base a lot, and I think Joe will make adjustments as needed. I don't think there was any sort of thought that when these guys took over those two spots that they were cemented in there and are going to be there until the end of the year. I mean, look at the way Kyle Schwarber's swinging the bat. You know, when the season started, if he had hit 1 or 2 a lot, I think a lot of fans would have said, well, you know, based on what he did last year, I don't know if he should be up there. Well, the way he's swinging the bat right now, you know, he could bat 1 or 2 and you'd feel very comfortable about it. Ben Zobrist, when he's been healthy, has been really good. So they've got options here, and I think Joe, who does tinker when needed, will do it. But I'm not worried about Baez. He put together a great month of April and is certainly a great candidate to win the Player of the Month. Last night, notwithstanding, I think the Cubs feel very, very good about what he's been doing.
And Theo mentioned when it came to Kyle Schwarber that, you know, when you look at him, he's standing taller, the hands are up higher, and he's feeling the benefits of the change in mechanics a bit. Is anything going on with Anthony Rizzo's mechanics, or is this just a you know, stretch of we've seen Anthony go through these before, obviously, and you're in this game long enough, you'll go through a couple times a season, but it sure seems like he has been more quiet than I've ever seen him.
Yeah, and, you know, he got the game-winning RBI last night, but it was a ground ball to the right side. I think we've seen more of those hitting right into the shift than in the past, and you can see clearly there's a lot of frustration for Anthony. I don't see anything mechanically, guys, that looks off. I'm sure, you know, Chili Davis and he have talked about that, and sometimes tweaks are a placebo mechanically. You're still right on top of the plate. I think the back issue and the fact that he was out for a bit, you know, has kind of kept him from getting into a rhythm. Chris Bryant coming back has one hit in his last three games. At the big triple, obviously, that led to the game-winning run last night. But when you sit out for a week and a half, I do think it's hard to get into a rhythm. And you know, the track record says Anthony Rizzo, by the end of the year, will probably hit 285 with a strong on-base percentage and hit 32 home runs. But it's just when it happens early in April, as we all know, it stands out a lot more than if it happens in the middle of the season.
Len, when you talk about the good things that have happened over the last month, if you add it all up, the great finish to the weekend, the great the sweep of the Brewers and putting together a winning streak. How do the Brewers recover from that? Right, I mean, it's already they've been dominated
seven
by the
out
Cubs,
of eight. Yeah,
and it seems like as much as you want to be in the mix, and I know it's just. There is a team there that is ahead of them and has shown it.
It's a good question. I think, though, my gut tells me that it doesn't matter as much as we think it does to the Brewers. I think this weekend was huge for the Cubs, but I don't think it means that the Brewers are all of a sudden pretenders and not contenders. They had a comeback win last night in Cincinnati. And because of the unbalanced schedule, guys, if they do the same thing to the Reds that the Cubs are doing to them, let's say they go, 16-3 against the Reds, you can mitigate a lot of that stuff. They're beating teams they should beat, and you can hang around for a long time doing that. Now, there is going to be a point where when they match up with the Dodgers and the Nationals and the Cubs and the Cardinals and some of the better teams in the league, I think for their psychology, kind of to answer your question, Molly, yeah, they're going to need to be a lot better. But I still think they're a very good club. A hit or two here or there, and they could have earned at least one win, if not a split, in the weekend series. And I think the Cubs still have a lot of respect for Milwaukee. And I think the other part to consider, and when we see them down the road, they didn't have one of their catchers who they use a lot, Steven Vogt. They've been without their closer, Corey Knebel. Their number one first baseman, Eric Thames, is now out for 2 months. Mm-hmm. And arguably their top starter, Jimmy Nelson, is hurt. So, they're a little undermanned. And I still think that of the other teams in this division, the Brewers are probably the one team the Cubs are going to have to handle by the end of the year. And fortunately, they have here early on.
Great stuff, Len. Really appreciate it. Great insights.
All right, guys, thanks. Talk to you next week.
Thanks,
that's
Len.
Len Casper. It's interesting. That answer at the end there is very interesting when you think about, because, Joe, in my mind, that one's been put to bed. But he's right. You can just keep going, and then there's more games later.
And can they sell themselves, say, hey, we're not healthy?
That's it. Yeah. Can they clear that mental hurdle?
Yeah, it's funny. You take away these Brewers games, and you could always play that game, but if you take those games away, they're just about a 500 club, and here they are sitting six games above, and we think there's no looking back. The bottom line is the pitching has been fantastic in all of those eight games.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mulligan Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score. He is our friend, Dan Pompey from the Athletic, Bleacher Report, and, of course, The Score. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
I'm great, fellas. Exciting weekend, huh?
Boy, I mean, I was kind of pumped up that the Bears got a few starters, it looks like. But then you start reading the national perspective on it, and everybody gave them an A. Everybody, people saying it was their favorite draft. People saying that they were in the top five of the best drafts. A lot of very positive response to the Bears draft.
And none of it means a damn thing.
No!
Right. Check back in 3 years. Ryan Pace said as much, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, was it great? Was it awful? I mean, we see these reviews every year, and really they're all worthless, but including our own.
Sure.
And with that being said, let's have a review of what the Bears did. I don't think there's any way to argue that Roquan Smith was not a ideal pick for the Bears on many, many fronts. He's a guy, I think, who, in addition to a guy who should be their leading tackler for many, many years to come, also should be a guy who is kind of the defensive centerpiece of everything they do, the leader, the alpha on that defense. And he also was a guy who could carry on, obviously, a great tradition that the Bears have had since the 1950s with four previous inside linebackers who made it to Canton. So, you know, that's a pick that you can't help but be excited about. I really didn't think he was going to be there. I thought he would go probably a couple picks before the Bears went. So I thought they got a little fortunate that he slid to them at the eighth pick.
Dan, I'm trying to remember, and maybe something comes right to mind for you, but another team or organization, or just GM, actually, who went out and got a quarterback, and I, you know, did this when I was covering the Bulls. I covered a team that was all Derrick Rose-centric, and John Paxson even said at the time, pretty much every move they made, the first question was, how does this, you know, does this player play work with Derrick? How does this impact Derrick? How does it, it was all about D. Rose, and for a time it looked great, and then the blessing turned into a curse. Can you remember a GM that drafted moved up, got this guy, identified the quarterback and said, he's our guy, and then went out and got a coach to fit the quarterback and then spent free agency and also the draft basically Mitch-centric or quarterback-centric and doubling and tripling down on the initial decision?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's probably happened. Off the top of my head, I can't come up with somebody. But, you know, the thing is, you have to be really careful, though. I mean, it's great in theory that you're doing that and that you're doing everything within your control to make sure that Mitch Trubisky has every chance to succeed. But the thing is, you have to be sure that Mitch Trubisky is what you thought he was, you know, and we haven't seen everything we need to see from Mitch Trubisky to really make that judgment yet, in my opinion. So, you know, you have to ask yourself a question, what if he is not what they thought he was? And then you've had all these other moves based on that one move, and that could really set your franchise back. But they're all in, and we're going to see how that plays out. You know, I don't think necessarily let's look at the scenario. Let's say that Trubisky isn't what you thought he was. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean that Anthony Miller was a bad draft pick or that, you know, any of the other moves that Matt Nagy was a bad hire. But certainly a lot of these acquisitions were made with Trubisky in mind.
It's interesting because I think there is, it seems, and maybe I'm wrong about this, Dan, but, you know, you see Baker Mayfield go off the board first and you think, well, they got Tyrod Taylor and they're going to run, you know, kind of an RPO, I would imagine, with those two quarterbacks. They're both similar quarterbacks. You know, I don't know how quickly Mayfield will play. I would imagine faster than you'd expect. Then you look at a team like Arizona that has Sam Bradford and has Mike Glennon backing him up, and then they go and get a Josh Rosen. You can argue that Bradford and Rosen and Glennon are all kind of the same quarterback. They're not going to run an RPO. In other words, there seems to be a theme through the team. Now we look at the Bears, and they went out and got a couple of quarterbacks to back up their guy, Mitchell Trubisky, and it seems like even the backup quarterbacks are part of the plan to develop Mitch, not part of the plan to be able to replace him if need be.
Well, I don't know if they're part of the plan to develop him so much as they are quarterbacks who
know the scheme.
Yeah, who are similar to him or could be kind of plug-and-play guys in case Mitch got hurt, I think, is what they're thinking. Obviously, Chase Daniels is a guy who has been with Nagy before. He's been in a similar system in Philadelphia and, you know, as you say, though, I mean, maybe there are benefits in terms of him being able to help Trubisky, but I mean, I don't think that's ever why you should sign a backup at any position. You should sign the backup because you think he's the next best person to play in case your starter can't play.
But it takes, like, if we had a caller earlier saying, why didn't they draft a quarterback? Well, part of it is they got to teach Mitch what's going on to even take your eye off the prize at all. They got two guys now that know what they're doing in that scheme. And that's going to, you know, it's going to prevent them from having to spend time teaching those guys. And it will allow more conversation about what's going on with the young quarterback.
It's hard to develop two young quarterbacks at one time, I think, is what you're getting at.
Right.
You know, you want Mitch Trubisky to have every rep possible in the offseason, in training camp, in preseason, all the way through. And, you know, if you've got another young quarterback you're worried about developing, you know, how are you going to bring him along if Mitch is getting all the reps and all the attention? So I think, you know, it probably makes sense to go with veteran backups at this point. Obviously, if there were a quarterback there at some point in the draft that you felt was a great value and a great fit, you know, you never should pass that guy up, because the quarterback always has value in some way, shape, or form. But, you know, it's hard to argue with the way they're approaching the quarterback position.
Dustin has a question that we've been getting from texters and some callers that, okay, everyone, if you're on board with Roquan Smith and you let the draft come to you, should you have gone and got Landry over Daniels in round two? Are there any second guesses that you would have had after looking at the totality of what the Bears did?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a good second guess, because the Bears ended up with three picks in the top 51, and they did not address their primary need. So obviously they tried to address it on day three a little bit, but, you know, they had a chance at one of the best pass rushers in the draft, the guy who had 16 and a half sacks 1 year in college, in Landry. So, yeah, I thought that was kind of an unusual move. And the other thing that struck me was that the two players they took in the second round, one is going to be a guard and the other wide receiver, are players that they needed because they created holes on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
So at the guard position, they cut Josh Sitton.
Right.
Well, somebody thinks he could play. He got a decent contract down there in Miami. He's with some coaches who had him last year and the year before last. So, you know, that move created a hole where they needed James Daniels. And then, obviously, they let Cam Meredith go. And they also cut, or not cut, but did not re-sign Kendall Wright. So you created a hole at the wide receiver position. You know, I wonder if they would not have been better served by not creating one of those holes and then making a move on Harold Landry at some point.
It's a great point. It seemed like the third day picks were all about getting traits and getting guys that could, you know, they just went with speed and traits. And, you know, if you actually make an argument that they're redrafting different positions, they kind of redrafted the position they drafted in the first round with the first of their fourth round picks.
Yeah. You know, I think at that point you're looking at needs and you're trying to get, like you say, traits and hope that you could develop guys. You know, the Kylie Fitz pick was interesting to me as a guy who, you know, you wonder what kind of draft prospect he might have been if he would have stayed healthy. And obviously you wonder if you can make him healthy and put him on a different path in his career. But he's, you know, he's got some ability. That's kind of an interesting one for me to watch. And I think the most interesting pick for me from that third day of the draft from the Bears.
Dan, why don't you appreciate Tom Brady more? What is going on? What is going on there? I mean, this. Oh yeah, I'm coming back, but really, I don't know. No one likes me anymore, and life's tough for the.
That was a strange one. I don't know what to make of that. I don't know if he maybe, you know, is it possible that he didn't mean what he said or was kind of speaking without thinking? I don't know, but.
Almost sounded like a therapy session.
Yeah, there have been some other signs that not everything is well there in New England. Maybe he's waiting for someone to tell him that they love him, and it hasn't happened yet. But maybe, you know, maybe there's something going on with the contract. I don't know what's happening there.
The contract thing is interesting because obviously he is a great player, and he probably feels like he should be paid the most amount of money. And maybe that's, you know, I don't know how else you show your love. I mean, I'm a big believer in hugs, but I don't know that covers for cash.
Yeah. You know, maybe he's upset about some of the offseason moves they've made, especially, you know, they let Amendola go. They let Brandon Cooks go. And, you know, haven't done a whole lot to replace those guys. Obviously, they've got Julian Edelman coming back this year, and they think that's going to be a big addition. Obviously, he was the leading receiver prior to his injury. So, you know, maybe he wanted more input in that. I don't know. I'm just speculating, but I have a feeling that come September, everything's going to be clicking the way it always is in New England. We'll see.
Dan, we'll let you go just on the way out. When you look at the edge rusher position, it seems like, you know, you want to talk about all in on Mitchell Trubisky. They're kind of all in on Leonard Floyd. He needs to take another step in his career, and he needs to be the guy to get it done. They've got projections and possibilities. We talked to Ryan Pace, and he didn't discount the possibility of re-signing a guy like Willie Young or Lamar Houston at a price that would be appealing to them. It doesn't look like – I mean, every year there seems to be a position where you got a bit of a hole, and that seems like a pretty big one for the Bears.
Yeah, they're living dangerously at that position, no question. They had more talent at the position going into the season last year than they do right now, considerably more. I think you felt good at that point about Willie Young, about Pernell McPhee. And, even if you assume that Leonard Floyd is going to be what you think he can be, you still need another one of those guys.
Yeah.
You need two pass rushers. And we're talking about arguably the second most important position on your football team. And the other thing is we still don't know about Floyd. You know, I mean,
yep.
Again, they're putting a lot of stock in the potential and also the hope that he can do something he hasn't done before, which is stay healthy and, you know, be a double-digit sack guy. So it is a gamble that they're making there right now, and I would think that they would go out and try to get a veteran, but, you know, the pickings out there on the free agent market at this point are not going to be great.
And they're never going to be at that position. It's going to be really hard to Aaron Lynch, all eggs in that basket. I mean, who knows, right? I mean, it's just there's a lot of if, come, and guessing. So it's just something to be concerned with.
I think what it tells you really is that they're dependent on Vic Fangio being able to scheme pressure, and they're also dependent on their cornerbacks and their safeties being able to cover in the back end. So
you'd make those guys a lot better with a pass rush.
You sure would. And that was another reason I thought, well, if you couldn't get a pass rusher, go out and get another cornerback or a safety or something.
Right,
And that didn't happen either.
All right, Dan. Thank you, pal.
Okay, guys. My pleasure. Thank you.
That is Dan Pompey. He does a great job. Read him in The Athletic and Bleacher Report. And, of course, you hear him here on The Score. You're listening to Mully and Hanley. The telephone number is 312-644-6767. And we always love talking to you. Mully and Hanley on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.